welcome to episode 3 of GovX Data Points, where we talk all things government and data. I'm your co-host, Eric Reese.
And I'm Sharon Paley. Today's episode is focusing on our What Work Cities Work and is entitled Making Cities Smarter. If you aren't too familiar with GovX, much of our day-to-day work is spent with cities, building capacity to increase data usage and improving the lives of residents. Today, we have a very special guest, Shireen Santisham, from one of our awesome city partners, San Jose, California. And we're really excited to talk with her about their work to make their city a better place to live.
To do that, in our discussion with Shireen, we're going to discuss the city's vision for smart cities. Shireen Santisham, the Chief Innovation Officer for Mayor Liccardo in San Jose, is leading the city's efforts to build a smart city vision and strategy for San Jose.
If you're not familiar with San Jose, it's a city of just over 1 million people in the Bay Area in California. You might know it because of its tech reputation and location right in the heart of Silicon Valley. Today, we're going to talk about what the city itself is doing to work better and smarter for residents. Without further ado, I'll kick it over to our interview with Shireen.
So San Jose is obviously at the center of Silicon Valley. So how is the tech community in your city informing the work that you're doing?
So we have over 70,000 tech workers in our city, which is actually more than San Francisco, and we lead the country in patents. So we have over 13,000 patents that come out of our city every year. So we've got an incredibly innovative population. And so, you know, they really help us sort of drive and shape our vision for our city. You know, they want to be more tech enabled. They want to see more innovation in government. And so it's a real blessing for the city that we have that community around us.
So as a follow-up to that, I mean, so 70,000 tech workers is, you know, almost as big as some of the cities we work with, right, that are about 100,000. So what kind of challenges does that present, you know, that maybe are that are unique to San Jose, but also maybe an advantage for you all as you go forward as well?
Yeah, I think we live in a city that's, you know, increasingly like one valley but two worlds. You'll often hear Mayor Liccardo say, which means that, you know, we have this influx of incredibly talented tech workers who are coming in, but we also have a shortage of housing that's driving up home prices, as well as really congested traffic conditions. And so what you start to see is rising inequality in our city. And one of our main priorities is how can we really use technology to become a more inclusive city and make sure that Silicon Valley remains open to all and all of our youth really get digital skills, get access to internet, are able to have the technology tools that will help them, you know, have access to those jobs in the future.
So you talk about this huge population growth and the disparate populations that you're serving. How are you leveraging data to address those ever diversifying needs and that ever growing population?
Yeah, so in addition to, you know, our city growing by 40% by 2040, which is about 400,000 residents in less than 15 years, we are also at the same time coming off of 8 years of fiscal tightening. So our budgets have shrunk. We lost a third of our workforce in City Hall. And so we're really trying to shift the conversation from how can we afford to innovate because we just are so short-staffed, to how can we not afford to innovate in a time of scarcity, because if we don't, we're not going to be able to deal with all these challenges facing our city. And so data is a really core part of what we're doing. And we were able to pass our open data policy just 2 weeks ago, which makes city's data sets open by default, except if there's, you know, privacy or security issues. And that means, you know, 600 data sets going online by the year 2020. And so what that's really going to allow us to do is to engage our civic tech community, use their knowledge, abilities. Like, we already see folks building apps that are relevant to their neighborhoods popping up. And so it's going to allow us to use the power of all of our citizens, as well as the City Hall staff, in order to drive towards results.
And do those apps address that diverse population, or are they sort of solutions? You know, it's a common heard accusation against the Valley that, you know, they're developing solutions that like help affluent white people, basically. basically. So to what extent, to what extent are those applications solving problems for everybody in your city?
Yeah, so I'll start by answering that question with my personal background. Mm-hmm. So my personal background is actually working on closing the digital divide for women internationally. So there's a gender digital divide that's caused by a variety of cultural and other factors around the world. And so the work I did was really on how do we include more women. Women are unfortunately less educated. They earn less, which means that they don't have access to the best digital tools. They often don't have digital skills in parts of the world. And so a lot of the research and advocacy I did was with that lens of inclusivity. Like, how do you think about, you know, women who don't speak a certain language, but they only have a phone available in a different language? And so, you know, when I think about this issue that you've raised, it's always top of mind. And so I think you're right that the current apps oftentimes deal with issues facing, you know, well-to-do neighborhoods. But one of the things that we are doing is that we're taking a hard look at how do we drive inclusivity with technology. So one of the things we're doing is partnering with Facebook on a new technology called Terragraph. And what it does is it amplifies your current fiber and in the ground to provide free Wi-Fi for all of our downtown corridor at gigabit speed, so like streaming video speed. And we are also looking at various communities around the city in order to test that technology. And this is the technology that they plan to take to the developing world, so to get free access for everyone, and it'll be open source. And so we're really thinking through how do we make sure that everybody has the access that they need. And then we know that it's also not just about access to the internet, it's also about hardware and digital skills, right? So you have poor families who can't afford, you know, the most modern equipment, and their kids are kind of left out as they're trying to do their homework. And so we are very aware of those issues and are taking, you know, significant steps over the next year to look at making sure everybody's included.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about, you know, like the community and the growth in San Jose, but what does this look like for the average employee of the city or even in your day-to-day? Like, how is this work informing what you do, and how does the data really help to drive the decisions that you're making as a city?
Yeah, well, we're just at the beginning of that journey. And so one of the things that I think happens to a lot of cities when they go through fiscal tightening is that they don't invest in the tools for their employees because they're just trying to hold on to staff. And so one of the things that happened is that we didn't invest very much in IT and digital tools for our employees. So they didn't have access to tablets, PCs. And so right now we're in the process of upgrading all of our IT systems, as well as starting to provide more digital tools to our staff. So what does it look like? You go from having a lot of paper, you know, having folks having to come in for every single service in person, fill out a paper form and submit it, to now suddenly being able to have services online.
And how are you doing that with these like tightened resources that you mentioned before? Because I think that's something that a lot of cities are looking to, you know, how do we improve our technology infrastructure in an era of, you know, ever dwindling financial resources?
Well, I think the first thing is there's a real business case for it because it costs more to upgrade your legacy system at the very end of its shelf life than if you have a really comprehensive plan around your IT infrastructure. So right now we're going back to getting better at planning and our refresh cycles. The other thing is to really tap into the innovations of the staff themselves. So for example, we have an HVAC team that manages all of our buildings' temperatures for the city. And before, what they were doing is that anytime there was a heating issue, they would have to go into the building physically and then adjust sort of the temperatures in the building. And recently they just started piloting iPads where they could do it remotely. Or actually, I think they were Surface Pros, but you know, a tablet that could do this work remotely. So, and they love it. It's a real way for them to collaborate with each other. It makes things much faster and they save substantial staff time, right? right? So they can just do more. So I think the idea that technology is inherently expensive and something that you do in addition to the work, the work of government, is something that we're really trying to break down. And it, like, technology is just a tool, and it makes it faster and more efficient. And so what we're trying to do is shift the mentality to say, are we giving our people the best tools? It's not about, you know, the latest gadget.
Sharon, can we get one of those for our trailer to regulate the temperature that we can't regulate? Because we need one.
Because walking 20 feet to the thermostat is just too far.
It's too far for me. Too far for some.
You let me know and I'll adjust the temperature for you.
So one of the things, like, I think all the work that you all have done sounds amazing, but what's the next step? Like, what is the next thing that you all need to tackle to continue pushing forward with your use of data and, you know, and technology and really harnessing it to meet resident needs?
Yeah. So one of the things we thought early on was really important was to have a vision that everybody could align on. So what we actually did is we created a smart city vision that has five core strategic goals. That are creating a safe city, an inclusive city, a user-friendly city, a sustainable city, and a demonstration city. So the demonstration part is about testing the latest technologies. And then we took this document to our city council and then asked them to resource it. So we asked them to create a permanent office in our city manager's office, as well as to create a permanent standing committee to oversee what we were doing. So we really designed the organization to support, you know, this new strategic vision. And so, you know, now we have that sort of alignment. We had unanimous approval by our city council, and then we followed that with open data policy a week later, which also got unanimous approval. And so now we really have the green light to go out and do this work in a big way. And so the next step is building out sort of a detailed work plan and prioritizing this with city staff and really asking them, you know, what are the most important challenges you're facing in your day-to-day work? Combining that with what we're hearing from residents, and then also thinking about the future and where we see, you know, trends, growth trends, and where are going to be the biggest pain points, and then coming back with a real prioritized list over the summer. We'll have it back by the fall, in which we, you know, then can go out and do the work.
And how long are you expecting it to be between making these, you know, five changes and setting up these new strategies and that actually impacting the lives of San Jose residents?
I think it will happen really quickly. You know, this is a technology and innovation vision. So we gave ourselves a 2020 deadline. Mm-hmm. So a lot of visions are 15 years, 20 years. You know, we have a less than 5-year vision. And the great thing about, you know, where we are and if we use technology in smart ways is we can really leapfrog a lot of that development. So I think we'll start to see impact, you know, within a year.
So as you've been kind of building that out, one of the things that we always like to ask people and, you know, cities are always interested in is what were the challenges that you faced and how did you really go about overcoming them in terms of building this smart vision for the city and building something that you really think is tangible and achievable in 5 years and that you'll see instant impact? Because a lot of our cities are interested in just generally like avoiding mistakes before they happen and learning from the experiences of others.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we have, you know, a weak mayor system in San Jose, which means that our city council is the one that really directs city hall staff. And so one piece of resistance that I would get at the beginning was around, hey, well, you're in the mayor's office. You can't really, you know, push on certain things. It has to go through the council. And, you know, maybe in the sort of naive perspective of having come from the private sector, like we just said, okay, we'll push it through the council. And so we did the policy work to get it through council and get alignment on it in order to get it through. And so I think there is a piece of being very practical and addressing the concerns, right? Like they had a real concern that they have, you know, the city staff is their short staff. They've got a lot of work. They've got a lot of priorities. And so how do you, you know, get focus there? And then the second thing is that I think that most people, even your most entrenched bureaucrat, is at their heart, they went into this job for public service. And they really just need the space to kind of tap back into that. And so, you know, having leadership, which we have both in the city manager's office and the mayor's office, that's really dedicated to this vision is really important. And then sort of tapping into the folks on the ground who are like excited about their jobs and trying to do some things. And then you move the sort of middle that is kind of like, well, we're going to see where things land. And so I think it's a really exciting time to be in San Jose. Like there's a lot of energy around the initiative. The public is very interested in seeing some changes. And so, you know, very optimistic for the future.
If you had one piece of advice for cities that are looking to do, you know, what you all have done, what would it be?
My piece of advice would be to take some time with like a small group of people and really just think about the big picture. So spend some a lot of thinking time up front about, you know, where you might get resistance, what are the issues that could come up in the process, and map that out early and anticipate where the resistance is going to happen and how it's going to happen. And if you do that and you come up, that will help you fill the gaps in whatever plan you're making. And that will help you push like sort of an overall vision.
Thanks, Shireen, for joining us. Check out the show notes on our website for more information on San Jose and their smart cities vision.
Also, be sure to answer our question of the week. This week, we're asking you to find the housing affordability index we've created at govx.jhu.edu and see if you can determine what the change in median rent from 2010 to 2014 was in San Jose. Email your answer to us at govx@jhu.edu, govx is govex. With your answer, winners will be announced on future podcasts, and maybe you'll even get a chance to suggest a future topic for our show. Join us next time as we find out where the data points.